On Division Street, under the freeway, there's generally a pretty good chance you'll encounter some encampments. Tents, piles of stuff, people milling around and chatting, or maybe trying to get some sleep. It's been this way for years. This is the kind of scene advocates, residents, and policymakers across the board all seem to agree should not be playing out in San Francisco. It's one of those issues where I hear even people who disagree saying similar things. Encampments are not an adequate response to homelessness. The streets are not a good place for people to wait for housing. People should have somewhere to go. That last idea has led some cities to shelter mandates, or a right to shelter for all. But there's really strong disagreement about what that will achieve. I'm Laura Wenis. New York City operates under a shelter mandate. Boston has one. And now San Francisco has pledged to come up with a plan to offer everyone shelter who needs it. Will that work? Shelter alone is not going to solve homelessness or even eliminate encampments. There is no universal solution to every homeless individual's situation. But there is demand for indoor spaces and for a reprieve from the streets. From the San Francisco Chronicle's SF Next project, this is Fixing Our City. I thought shelter mandates were pretty simple and straightforward. If you don't want people sleeping or camping on the streets, give them somewhere else to be. But it's hard to just focus on shelter without having to think about all the other aspects of homelessness that are related. The main argument in favor of offering shelter to everyone is that even if things inside them aren't ideal, anything is better than having no choice but the sidewalk. The main critique is that when a requirement like this doesn't come with independent funding, money and resources get moved away from longer-term interventions that could actually end someone's homelessness. Here's one critical voice, Jennifer Friedenbach, director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. This is an influential advocacy nonprofit that does not get city funding.
I think there's this thought out there like, well, you know, housing's going to take forever. You hear this from politicians a lot, right? Housing's going to take forever, so we can just very cheaply just put up a bunch of shelter and we'll at least get folks off the streets. And so it sounds like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Well, for one thing, it's not cheaper or faster to put up shelter. And you can do a housing subsidy in the private market much more quickly and per person with support services for much less money because you don't need 24-hour staffing. So that faster and cheaper thing just isn't real. The other thing is that it's what you really want to do is you want shelter stays to be really brief and then move people out of shelter into housing.
Friedenbach was pretty critical of early versions of San Francisco's new policy called A Place for All. A new version of this legislation was passed in the summer with some changes that the coalition lobbied for. It directs the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, often called HSH, to develop a strategy to offer some kind of placement for every person on the street willing to accept it. The legislation itself doesn't allocate money. It requires HSH to come up with a cost estimate. The mayor and the Board of Supervisors will then have to fund the plan. We asked HSH for an update about the plan to get a sense of how it's shaping up, but didn't get one. The legislation itself doesn't allocate money. It requires HSH to come up with a cost estimate. The mayor and the Board of Supervisors will then have to fund the plan. The legislation allows for a variety of different types of placements, from full-on housing to a bed in a dorm to a parking spot for vehicle dwellers. It limits how much of the new options can be congregate shelter or places to pitch a tent. I asked Friedenbach about the different types of shelter.
So there's a couple different things that we define as shelter here. It's not necessarily just people get a cot in a big room, what we know as congregate shelter. There's also things in the current proposal and in the city that are more like, here's a parking lot, you can park your vehicle in it without getting ticketed. Or here's a parking lot, you can put your tent in it without getting kicked out. It is hard for me to wrap my mind around how those things would actually take longer to build up and be more expensive than a private market housing subsidy.
God, I know, right? So,
but you're saying they are?
Yeah.
You might have heard about the city-approved encampments that cost $61,000 a year per tent. Granted, a housing unit or hotel with wraparound services can be even more expensive than that, But Friedenbach says what drives up the cost of these apparently quick solutions is the staffing for services, hiring security, and the installation of bare-bones necessities like electricity, bathrooms, and showers. The detailed plan for shelter going forward is going to be up to the Homelessness Department, HSH. District 8 Supervisor Raphael Mandelman wrote the new legislation, A Place for All.
I think actually HSH is much closer to the position of the Coalition on Homelessness than I am, in that they're not really prioritizing having a shelter option for everyone. They, you know, want a range of options and want to have more PSH.
PSH stands for Permanent Supportive Housing.
I think their real focus is ending homelessness, permanently ending homelessness for people, which, you know, a shelter bed doesn't do. So I think this analysis is not probably something that HSH would have done on its own.
Here's his pitch for why the department should focus on significantly expanding shelter.
I just think it is wrong and inhumane to leave people outdoors. I think it's dangerous to leave people outdoors for themselves and for the areas where these encampments are growing up and often returning. And fundamentally, I want San Francisco to be a city that it largely doesn't have encampments, and certainly doesn't have encampments in neighborhoods where people are trying to live or work or get down sidewalks. And the only way for us to get there is actually to have an exit for people, a reasonable exit to offer people.
There doesn't seem to be much disagreement that people shouldn't be forced to languish on the streets. I asked Friedenbach, we don't have the housing available for everyone on the streets right now. So isn't it better to have somewhere to go that isn't outside?
So, of course, but that it's not. The question is, isn't it better to end homelessness? We don't need to choose in that way. We want to have shelter. And of course, we want to have shelter for everyone who needs it, wants it. And that shelter has to turn over or else it's of no use because the beds are full and nobody else can get to it. So it's really when we're talking about shelter is system flow, getting people out of the shelter so that the next person can use that bed. And that's really what needs to be emphasized.
I have seen you write about national experts on homelessness recommending right-sizing our shelter system. Pre-pandemic, I seem to remember we regularly had more than 1,000 people on the shelter wait list trying to get into a shelter, notwithstanding the conditions in shelter. So clearly there's demand. What would right-sizing mean when we have this demand?
Yeah, so you are correct. We did have 1,000 people on the wait list coming into the pandemic. We were recommending, and that was pretty typical over time, that we add 1,000 shelter beds and, you know, and that could get us there potentially if all other things being equal, no mass pandemics. There's this modeling that has to take place that San Francisco has not done, but it has been done in a lot of other places. And so Houston's kind of, you know, famous for theirs. I think, you know, they really kind of shook up their system, tried to figure, you know, gathered all the data, looking at the prevention, looking at the number of people flowing through the system in every year, estimating how many people you can prevent from becoming homeless with X amount of dollars, and then how many people you can house, and then how fast people will be able to flow through the system.
We talked about Houston's approach to homelessness on the August 2nd episode of Fixing Our City. That equation Friedenbach talked about, the capacity of the system and how fast people can flow through it, that's the problem New York City has run into. New York is often held up as a model. The streets look less encamped. Homelessness is less visible because that city has a shelter mandate. It must find a place for everyone who needs it. And lately, a lot of people have been needing it. Busloads of immigrants and refugees have been showing up in New York, sent there by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Renee Mitchell says the city was overwhelmed.
I believe the Department of Homeless Services wasn't ready to house that many people.
Mitchell is the executive director of a nonprofit called Breaking the Cycle Drop Corps. She's been homeless before, with a young child, no less. She started the organization to help people get back on their feet with the help of wraparound services.
Once the migrants came in, the shelters was above capacity after they got off of the bus and being bused into New York. Madison Square Garden was closed down and it was opened up as the intake service for some of the migrants. And some of the migrants, they didn't have any beds. So some of them was on the floor in the intake, sleeping because they didn't have no place to put them.
Mitchell says it isn't always like this. The shelter system does normally have capacity.
Under normal circumstances, you go to a Department of Homeless Services intake site, state your case, and get a placement. And I should note that while New York's system is referred to as a shelter mandate, accepting a placement is specifically voluntary. There's a process, but it doesn't hold things up, she says.
They're not going to walk back out the door. They're still going to be housed and they're going to have a bed.
That's what makes a lot of people look at New York and say, things seem to be better over there. Maybe that should tell us something. Mark Nagel has been keeping tabs on what's going on in this East Coast city. He's co-founder of a group called Rescue SF, a nonprofit here made up of residents who want to advocate for policies that will meaningfully address homelessness.
In New York City, it's clear that the shelter mandate there has saved lives. Absolutely clear. We don't have to go any further than the original case that brought about the shelter mandate, case of Callahan v. Carey. Mm-hmm. That case was brought in 1979 on behalf of Robert Callahan, a homeless man. Case was eventually settled in 1981. Before the case was resolved, Callahan died on the streets of New York.
Right.
Right. And there are lots of people who have been through New York City shelters who will say, it saved my life. So also advocates will point out that the shelter system has problems, right? It provides people the basic shelter and comforts and so people don't die from the elements, but it doesn't have enough services, and then people aren't getting a path out of shelter. So shelter is not the destination. Shelter should be just a temporary stepping stone on the way to permanent housing.
Yeah, I think the critique primarily is look at how much money they're spending for what they're getting, basically.
Well, they're getting a lot of people off the streets. You know, the New York City shelters this week have more than 60,000 people in them, right? That's about 10% of the country's entire homeless population is in New York City shelters.
And there are other critiques that I can't omit. Mitchell told me about rat and other pest infestations in shelters, mold, and other substandard conditions.
You got billions of dollars coming in your organization. That shouldn't happen.
But more importantly, she's not convinced New York is actually doing that much better at managing street conditions than other cities.
We don't have a skid row, okay, like San Francisco or Los Angeles, but, okay, it's getting there. Because on 116th Street and Lexington Avenue, we got encampments, okay, all throughout the streets. And we got drug addicts nodding in the streets with dermatitis needles sticking in their hands in broad daylight.
So not that much better than San Francisco after all.
No, it's not. I'm going to be honest with you. Okay, I don't believe in any congregated shelters. I think they should be shut down. My colleagues believe the same. I believe that they're warehousing people like cattle, okay? And I believe there's nothing, okay, there to address the root causes for them.
And without addressing the cause of a person's homelessness, it's hard to have turnover in the shelters. The spaces just fill up. Whether that's a person getting back on their feet and finding stability on their own, or finding supportive housing, or getting a short-term subsidy to bridge the gap. Jennifer Friedenbach with San Francisco's Coalition on Homelessness isn't against shelter. She says it just doesn't make sense for a city to put all its eggs in that basket.
You have all the inflow, and then if people aren't moving out, they're just stuck there. And so it's just not an efficient use of shelter. So if we do the right, you know, really good investment in prevention, really good prevention in housing, we can have that turnover in the shelter, and then we'll have shelter availability for folks who are out on the streets.
It remains to be seen if San Francisco is actually putting all of its eggs in that basket, because the homelessness department still has to come up with an authoritative estimate of how much this initiative will cost. It also needs to estimate how many units of housing or subsidy the city would need to make sure that there is a pathway back out of shelters. Mark Nagel with Rescue SF says we need to do something immediately.
There's an urgency to get people off the streets now, whether it's through shelter or housing, that has to be the goal, and we need a goal. A place for all, this is the first legislation that actually forces the city to have a goal, to aim towards a goal of having enough places to go for everyone on the streets. That is very positive. That's what residents of San Francisco want. And that's what the people who are unsheltered want.
Which is another important question. What do people who are unsheltered want? Homeless people are not a monolith, and what works for one person may not work for another. You wouldn't be helping a person who lives in a tent by giving them an RV parking spot, for example. Here's Renee Mitchell again in New York. She talks about having no wrong door, as in someone seeking help should never be turned away and told to go through a different channel for what they need.
What I think is that they should address it by their needs with no wrong door. Whatever resources and services, okay, the individual need, have these resources on hand, be it transitional, be it low-income housing, be it mental health housing, supportive housing, be it tiny homes, okay, trailers. That's how it should be addressed, because right now, okay, it's just a one-size-fits-all approach. And you're saying that everybody, okay, has to be addressed this way with their homelessness. And then that's not true.
It's clear every individual has different needs. For some, a shelter bed is the answer. For others, not so much.
I asked for a shelter, and they gave me one, so I left the next day.
More on that after a break. Cities are trying to address street encampments by expanding shelter options to make sure everyone who's willing to leave the street for some kind of alternative can do so. But there doesn't seem to be a good one-size-fits-all solution. Take Roger Snyder, for example. He lives on a side street behind some big box stores and warehouses. It's lined with tents and other tarp-covered structures. Snyder stays out here with his girlfriend and says he doesn't really mind the tent.
Well, I have no home, so I might as well live someplace.
Snyder is in his 70s. He was in prison for more than 48 years. He got out a little more than a year ago, has been drifting around, and landed here. He's got plans to leave for Minnesota at the beginning of December. And until then, well, shelters aren't his thing. He got into one once by inquiring at the Tenderloin Center on Market Street.
I asked for a shelter, and they gave me one. I went over there, and here's about 50 other people, men, snoring and stuff. So I left the next day.
Plus, you've got your girlfriend, right?
Yeah, but she's too scared to go. A friend of hers got beat up real bad. And she didn't want nothing to do with no shelters.
So he's out here in a tent. I asked him if he's worried about police trying to move him or the city cleaning up the site, and he shrugged it off. Now, a hotel, someplace with a door to close and where his girlfriend could come along, that he would take. San Francisco's new policy, A Place for All, ordering the city to create a plan to offer everyone someplace to go, takes that into account. There'll be a variety of options, including, after a push from the coalition, actual long-term housing. Supervisor Raphael Mandelman, who wrote it, knows there has to be more available than just a cot in a dorm hall. There will be places to park a car off the street for vehicle dwellers, cabins or what you might call tiny homes, hotel rooms, and shared shelter rooms that are smaller with fewer roommates.
I think a good society, a good city, will try to make some, to the extent we have the resources, and I think we do, we'll try to have some different options, you know? And I think for some people, congregate shelter is fine. And for some people, they even prefer it because they can be with, you know, I remember one of the things I was looking into my first year in office was the population of very elderly people in shelters.
Yeah.
And for some of the, I mean, for some of it, it's, to an extent, that's just, you know, a shame on all of us. But to another extent, I learned there were people who want to be in that shelter because they have their people are there, you know, and that's that congregate living is something that they feel comfortable with or have become comfortable with. And it's what they want. It's not what I would want. I think, you know, if I were unhoused, I think a tiny home would be a far more preferable option or something where I had some space of my own.
Plenty of people will take any opportunity to come indoors. Jennifer Friedenbach with the Coalition on Homelessness points out that they can't just go to a shelter and get in. There are hubs where you can apply for a spot, but a lot of people get their referrals when their encampment is cleared and a city worker offers them a spot. The result, Friedenbach says, is that people living in encampments that housed people have complained about are more likely to get into shelter. The version of the Place for All legislation that passed includes a requirement for the homelessness department to establish some kind of phone system for homeless people to ask for shelter. But shelter alone is unlikely to be enough to make encampments disappear completely. Producer Cynthia Lopez and I spent a few hours in the streets talking to people outside of tents and other structures. Most didn't want to be recorded, but what they showed us is that just because you have a shelter bed doesn't mean you won't be spending time in encampments or storing your belongings there. It's not exactly a scientific poll, but 4 out of the 7 people we encountered at the encampment said they were at that time actually living in a hotel, cabin shelter, or navigation center. A few steps away from Roger Snyder's spot, someone else was organizing some things in a makeshift structure because they have more belongings than what's allowed at the Navigation Center where they stay. We encountered two more people at a Division Street camp who said they were staying at 33 Gough, a cabin shelter site. Another person was at a hotel. And yet, this encampment is still here. No surprise to Jennifer Friedenbach, who directs the local Coalition on Homelessness.
Yes. Hello. People are going to continue to go to the store, walk around, hang out with friends. Unhoused people are no different than other people. Like, they have lives. They're not going to just like lock themselves in a room and so the public doesn't have to see them because they're poor and raggedy. I mean, it's really, you know, and a lot of that stuff is, you know, there's an element of classism, but there's a huge element of racism there. And so disproportionately, homelessness hits Black and brown folks. And I think this idea that once you house people that they disappear is not the case.
Nor is it a surprise to Supervisor Raphael Mandelman, who's heard the same from staff at the Healthy Streets Operations Center, or HSOC.
It is absolutely necessary to have adequate shelter space for people who are willing to come in off the streets. And it will not be sufficient to end the pretty problematic behavior and also just the encampments. You know, what you experienced in that visit is not totally surprising to me because I have heard this from the HSOC resolution people when they go into the Castro, as they do pretty frequently. Yeah, there are sometimes people who don't have a placement, and they're also finding a lot of people who are on the sidewalk with their friends, sometimes engaging in pretty problematic behavior, who have another place to be.
Both he and Friedenbach acknowledged that it's not just friendly chatting going on out on the streets. There is also drug use. And while it's even harder to address a substance use disorder while unhoused, putting someone in a shelter or housing does not automatically make that go away.
No, not especially not if they're using dangerous drugs, because people want to use around other people in case they overdose.
Right.
Very few people become homeless because they have a substance use disorder. What the percentages of people who have substance use disorders upon entering homelessness versus once they're homeless for long periods of time, it just skyrockets, right? Same with mental health stuff. And so it's a situation is as long as you're out there, the more other things get developed. That said, you know, if the issue is around drug use, we don't have an adequate treatment capacity, everybody's path to recovery is very different and people need different things in order to get there. And so same on the mental health side, you know, we have really limited situation there. And so a lot of people end up staying homeless. If they do have mental health or substance use issues, they're unable to address them while they remain homeless. Stabilizing them in housing, they are able to address those. But all these issues get conflated so frequently.
Mandelman, the District 8 supervisor, says it's time to lean into enforcement.
I think, you know, parts of my district, I think, are better for the work that's been done over the last, you know, few years to get people off the streets, to get them somewhere better, and to continually engage with them if they come back and try to communicate with them that they can't continue to come back. It's been a slower and more painful process than I would have liked. And I think we have to move more aggressively in that direction. So the coalition thinks we've moved too far in that direction already. I think we need to go quite a bit further.
And what does that mean? Like, don't come back here, don't re-encamp, or else what? Because I think, you know, obviously there's an issue with people who do not have a lot of money are probably not going to pay a fine, and fines might not mean that much. And the jails are pretty full.
Yeah. I mean, the jails are at half the capacity. They're at half what they were, you know, or two thirds of what they were before the pandemic. But yes, we, you know, jail is not the solution to this problem, but neither is leaving people where they are for weeks and weeks. And what we do now is, yeah, if you come back to the place where you were last camping, and people do, you'll probably get moved again, but it'll probably happen in several weeks or maybe months. And I think that that's not communicating the message. And for the people who have a place, who are back on the street, you know, in these encampments, like, that cannot be the place to come back to. And, you know, I think we need to, if you are using in public space and you meet that profile, you know, we should be citing you for it. We should be citing, arresting, and prosecuting people for dealing. For the folks who are coming back to sort of use our public spaces as substance use spaces, no, you should be cited. And ultimately, there probably should be a criminal sanction for it. Like, it's not okay.
Friedenbach says it's hard to imagine stepped up enforcement.
I mean, people are enforced so heavily already. I mean, already like 70% of Mission police calls are in response to the presence of a homeless person. I mean, it's just an incredibly bad use of resources. So what should be happening is that, you know, when folks are out there, alarm bells should be going off. You know, there's one person, doesn't need to be 15, working with them to address any barriers they have in getting housing and then working and helping them get housing. And that should not be based on complaints. That should just be based on the fact that you're out there and need some help.
Help. Here's what Ashley Treba has to say about that. We're talking out on Division Street. She comes to hang out here to get away from the rules at her shelter, where she can't have visitors.
But the only way you're going to find out how to help somebody is if you ask them how they need help. You can't tell somebody how they need help. You need to get to know the person to figure out how they, where they need help. You can't tell somebody you need help because not everybody needs the same help.
Treba is seeking housing, and she's expecting to be routed to a one-bedroom apartment at the end of an application process. That would be the shelter system working as designed. An immediate exit from sleeping on the street, but one where she doesn't stay in a shelter bed forever. This is that flow so many people told me about that you need in order for this system to work. And that means having housing available for people to go to. Which is why this whole thing is a little more complicated than I originally thought. Nobody is saying that more shelter is a panacea. But one school of thought says we need to expand shelter dramatically as a crucial first step in the bigger picture. And the other says that shouldn't come at the expense of effective long-term interventions. And like so many intractable problems in San Francisco, this one's tied to intractable problems at a bigger scale. Mark Nagel with the Neighbors Policy Advocacy Group, Rescue SF, lays out that concern.
And so that means we need to have some help from a higher government level agency, from the federal government, from the state government, because homelessness is not a local problem. It's a national problem from our housing crisis. And so we have to recognize that to really get out of it, we're going to have to get more resources. San Francisco has a lot of compassion, but we can't solve the problem for the whole country.
For now, the city's Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing is working on a plan to at least offer shelter to everyone. It's due at the end of the year to the Board of Supervisors. Presumably, there will be a hearing that interested members of the public can attend and comment on, likely in January. If the plan is approved, it'll be implemented over the course of the next 3 years. HSH is also holding a General Strategic Planning Town Hall on Monday, December 5th. It'll be held virtually at 5 p.m. The link is at hsh.sfgov.org. Fixing Our City is part of the San Francisco Chronicle's SF Next project, where we explore how the city will chart its future and address its biggest challenges. And we want to check out your ideas. Do you have a solution you want this city to pursue? Do you know someone who's making a difference on an important issue? Send an email to sfnext@sfchronicle.com. You can also DM us on Twitter. We're at sfnext. I'm Laura Wenis. Next time on Fixing Our City, we'll take you to a restaurant that's closing down, even though the owners seemed to have done everything right. What's this tell us about running a restaurant in San Francisco in 2023? See you next week. Cynthia Lopez produces and reports for Fixing Our City. Gary Baca is our sound engineer. King Kaufman is the executive producer. Jonathan Krim is the SF Next project editor. Fixing Our City is part of the San Francisco Chronicle's SF Next project, exploring how the city will shape its future and tackle its biggest problems. Read stories by our reporters, check out interactive data breakdowns, and find our podcast archive at sfchronicle.com/sfnext. If you have a solution you'd like us to cover or you know about a city that's doing something right, get in touch. Shoot an email to sfnext@sfchronicle.com or find us on Twitter @sfnext.